This is True North Story, the original podcast series. Learn, love, listen, live. With your hosts, Tama Fulton and John Hudson Messerall. Are you ready to discover your True North Story?
We believe ultimately your stories and your experiences and those resonating with the audience, and the audience going, you know what? I want to know more about Ryan. And who knows what those connections and relationships lead to.
Thank you, Ryan, for being here
yes,
with us.
Yes, thank you.
We My sure pleasure. Appreciate having you. For those in the Pacific Northwest may or may not know who Ryan is, but Ryan, you've got a very fun blog called Ryan in the U.S.
Yep. Oh my goodness, yes.
U.S. is not where you grew up.
No. How did you tell?
Hey, by the way, I switched my Siri over to Australian accent.
Oh, yeah.
So there you go. Yeah, that's how powerful your accent is.
Well, I actually changed mine to English, so mainly because I like them to be subservient to me. So,
love it.
So where did you grow up, Ryan?
I grew up in Perth, Western Australia.
So okay.
About as far away from Seattle as you can get and still be on land.
I'll just say I've been to Australia a few times. I've never been to Perth.
No.
I've been to Melbourne, Sydney, Brisbane, up the Gold Coast, the Whitsundays.
Beautiful.
So, exactly. So yeah. I've seen a lot of the Western, well, Eastern.
Yep.
Eastern and Northeastern.
Yep.
Right. I'm upside down. So yes, Eastern and Northeastern.
I'm not going to make
a joke
about that.
But Perth is like a 5-hour plane ride,
yeah,
would you say, from Sydney?
It's about 4.5 hours flight from Sydney. But it's, you know, you're not alone. A lot of travelers do the east coast of Australia and don't go to Perth. And the wonderful thing about going to Perth, though, is it then accesses the west coast, which is so remote and sparsely populated, which is, you know, for me, I grew up traveling with my parents and family. You know, the caravan around Western Australia, which is 2.5 times the size of Texas, and there's barely any people out of Perth, the city. So there's a few little cities, but it's an amazing place to grow up. And
how big is Perth, like population-wise?
It's about 2 million. Decent-sized
okay.
city,
yeah.
But it's so remote, though. It's, I think, you know, the second most remote city in the world, so in terms of capital city. So it's,
I had no idea.
It's a long way from nowhere, sadly, but it's a wonderful city. It's very, very beautiful city. It's really well laid out, and it's got great seasons and beautiful white beaches and surfing and great art community.
So people definitely need to put that on their travel list.
I recommend it.
Yeah.
But I might be biased.
Well, and obviously, and we'll get back to this in a minute, I did see that you got to connect with Hugh Jackman, right?
Yeah.
So talk a little bit about that.
I grew up in Perth and went to university there and then took off to Sydney for a couple of years, as a lot of us Perthites do, go to the East Coast and then came back. But while I was studying, I went to the West Australian Academy of Performing Arts, and I studied arts management there. During that time, I befriended a guy called Hugh Jackman, who was studying theatre, and a bunch of other musical theatre and theatre folks, and we all sort of hung out a little bit. You know, you sort of walk around this academy, there's jazz musicians and, you know, all sorts of amazing talents around. But Hugh just stood out from day one because he's so professional. Everything you see in the interviews that you see now is exactly the way he was then. So kind. Remembered your name every single time, would always stop and talk to you.
Wow.
Had all the time in the world for everybody, but worked hard and was the star of the show every single time they walked on stage. And I had the joy of watching him live on, you know, little theaters, like 20-person theater for 3 years. So
that's incredible.
Great. 20 to, you know, that was a smaller theater, but there was other theaters there that had 300 people in it. But he was just born with this gift. but yeah, so what happened is about 21 years later, a buddy of mine, Scott Cardy, invited me to go and interview Hugh for his new movie, Logan, in New York, and surprise him as sort of someone that can come in and we talk about the old times. So I was wondering whether he'd remember me or not, because we obviously didn't keep in contact. He blew up and I just followed, you know, his career.
Right.
And then I walk in and see him, hands on, someone told him that someone he knew was walking in, and hands on hips, looking through the door, trying to work out who it was. And he's like, "Oh, Ryan, how you doing?" You know, and they turned the cameras off because we were catching up like Aussie guys do. and that's probably a good thing. Talking about one particular deal that we had with the Academy where we weren't allowed to do what we wanted to do, and we got a little frustrated with them. then the cameras went back on and I got to interview him, and it was a treat. It was nice to reconnect with him.
And what's nice is that he is the same individual, because we all know when people blow up, not all, but there are the prima donna tends to set in. He always struck me, I don't know him, but I mean, he always struck me as a tremendous talent and a hard worker and a pretty average guy. He'd have a beer with him and he'd be a pretty cool guy.
Yeah, I mean, he's an awesome guy. He also does a lot of philanthropy, has a fair trade coffee company.
How awesome is that?
Two little stores or coffee shops in New York, and he'll pop in every now and then and talk to the staff. There's a woman from Seattle who works there who I'm friends with, and that the proceeds of some of that goes back to the people around the world where he sources the coffee from, and it's a great thing.
Tam and I were just talking about this, and I don't know whether you have an answer, and then we'll come back to making sure we talk about Ryan. But I'm just curious, what is it about Australia in general that seems to generate really strong actors that have broad appeal in the American market? I mean, we know how many actors have come out of Australia that have become extremely popular, extremely successful. What do you think that is, that connection that makes that happen?
Well, it's really interesting. And I'll tell you now, there's more than you know, because there's so many of them that have accents. I'll be watching television and you know, sitting at home saying, that's an Australian. Not because I can pick the accents, but because, you know, I knew them from college or, you know, and different experiences after college. And it's amazing how many Australian actors there are in Hollywood, both on TV and in film. And I think that the only thing I can put it down to is I think Australians have this wonderful culture of traveling and seeing the world and sort of living as a youngster. And I think that gives us a great connection to the planet and the different types of people. And I think that allows people to, from an acting perspective, to be able to draw upon those experiences and that worldliness to be able to go a bit deeper. And because we're so remote, it's a cultural phenomenon. Everybody travels either before or after college. You know, probably 80% of Australians, you know, lived in London or traveled the world or circumnavigated the world as a youngster. So,
And I think Americans are starting to do that more, certainly with the millennials. I don't think our generation was like, you go, you graduate, you get a job, you know, you start making some money, you start working your way. It wasn't like go take 2 years to find yourself in Europe or Australia.
You go to Canada and go to Whistler and go skiing. And how many Aussies are on the ski?
And it's true. Don't they have that year in about age 19 or 20 when you do take a year?
You can. Yeah. There's a cultural thing. There's no penalty for taking a time between high school and college. And certainly people do it after college as well. I did it after college. I put a backpack on and traveled for 6 months and circumnavigated the globe. And it was, you know, it's an amazing experience by myself. Didn't travel with anyone.
Really?
Just walked.
I bet
great.
There's some interesting stories there.
Yeah. Now, Crocodile Dundee called that a walkabout. Is that what you would call it?
I was when you guys said hi to me, I was going to say good day, but I thought that'd be too cliche. But Jeremy
speaking of marketing,
how are you going? It's how you going.
How you
it's
going?
Not how you doing.
How you going?
How you going?
How you going?
Well, speaking of marketing, at least we didn't talk about shrimps on a Bobby.
Not yet.
Exactly.
But you just did. But that's Australian market, the Marketing Commission, you know, doing that with Crocodile Dundee himself, right?
Right.
Yep, exactly.
Yes, exactly.
It's the worst piece of marketing.
Yeah, and for the rest of humanity, we all had to listen to people's horrible impressions of whatever.
Paul Hogan. If I can just tell one quick, when I moved to Seattle, I was rock climbing a lot, and I was outside a rock climbing gym. I'd just been climbing, and a homeless person came up to me and obviously needed some money, but thought he needed to ask with a knife. And so came up to me and said, "Give me your money," and shoved this knife in my face. It was a pocket knife. And I sort of looked at him and laughed and reached down behind my pocket, you know, out of my pocket and pulled out nothing and said, "That's not a knife. This is a knife." And he just sort of looked at me and I said, "Look, mate, wrong guy, Australian. That blade's not going to worry me." He looked at me, thought I was absolutely crazy and walked away. And he shook his head in disbelief. But it's sort of one of those funny stories where it was just too funny not to do it. Anyway,
absolutely.
I love it.
It's probably stupid to do that, but it was funny.
So studying in school, your hopes and dreams at that age and what you were studying were to be what?
Well, to work in theatre, actually. So, you know, I went to WAPA, the West Australian Academy of Performing Arts, studying arts management. My ultimate goal was to be an arts manager, to manage probably a contemporary dance company or a theatre or something of that nature. And so that's what I was studying. The course takes about 20 people from around the world each year. It's very hard to get into, and I was lucky enough to get into it. And then I discovered that I liked... I'd always been around dance, and so I discovered the dance department and sort of made friends with a whole bunch of dancers and did front of house for them. And yeah, just fell in love with it and started working for dance companies. Before you know it, somebody said, "Hey, do you want to dance? You're a bit athletic. Do you want to do a show?" And so I ended up doing a show, professional show, in a fringe festival before I'd done one single dance contemporary dance class in my life.
Wow.
Holy cow.
And so I did that, and that was horrible. It was terrible. And then that led to other, I got to, you know, do some classes with some of these dance companies that I was working. So I had some of the world's best dancers training me every day. And it was fun. And so I moved to dancing, and I thought it'd be a great thing to be an arts manager who understood what it was like to be on stage.
Yes.
So I did backstage, on stage, front of house, you know, the marketing department, did all that kind of stuff, and worked in dance for about 6 years. Produced a show that went to the Sydney Opera House and had a lot of fun with it. Traveled. It was great. The focus for me was always to be in the front office and either managing and marketing. And that's the marketing to $0. I mean, we talk about marketing as being difficult. Try marketing a nonprofit, which has you don't have a product yet. So the product is in a choreographer's head. And then you have to predict how many seats you're going to sell. Mm-hmm. And what revenue you're going to come in from sales. And then you've got to go to a funding body and tell them what the deficit's going to be and ask them to give them the money. If you make too much, they don't give you funding the next time. If you make too little, they don't give you funding next time. So you're working to a $0 break-even balance. And either way is horrendously challenging for your next time around for grants.
Oh, so, I can only imagine.
So that kind of marketing is, so you've got to sell the tickets that you say you're going to sell, and you've got to market it in a smart enough way to be able to get those results. So I always found that to be an incredibly good training ground for marketing to get as much money as you possibly can. I mean, that seems so much easier to me than marketing to $0, but that was the beginning of my falling in love with marketing.
Growing up, how did your family feel when you said, "I really want to go into the arts"? Did they say, "We always wanted you to be a doctor," or did you get a positive result?
No, I did. Look, I grew up in a really low socioeconomic area. So I think there was 200 plus, maybe 250 kids in our class or my year. And I think netted out about 4 or 5 of us went to college.
Holy cow.
A huge drop off, right? In fact, that school that I went to doesn't even offer college class prep.
What did your classmates do, like in Perth? I mean,
tradesmen. I mean, some of them didn't do anything. Some of them ended up in jail and for really bad things. But most of them are really awesome, hardworking people I love very dearly who do amazing things in the community and are really good people.
You know, in America right now, we're having this discussion about everybody going to college, everybody getting a college degree, coming out with tremendous amounts of student debt and skills that are really not applicable.
Don't mean anything. Yeah.
Exactly. So
it is really interesting. So I think the development of trade skills is really strong in Australia. And there's a lot of, you know, oil and resources, natural minerals and resources, and a lot of work that comes with mining. And I mean, Perth is a great example of a town that's just made a lot of money from a huge state with a lot of resources in it. So a lot of guys go up and do that and make a lot of money, more than I do. They make tons.
It's like the people that go up to North Dakota to work the oil field or fracking or whatever, and they're making $100,000 to $200,000 a year.
Yep.
They can't make that anywhere else.
My nephew has been doing it for years. He's got way more money than I do. I mean, it's everyone has their course and their direction. But in answer to your question, my parents were pretty stoked that I just made it to college. but I love the arts, and what I loved about that course is it was the sort of the coming together of two things I really liked. I love math and I love numbers and I like business, and I love the arts. So it was a great course for me to focus on. And what they were less impressed was when I said I wanted to transfer to the dance course. That was met with a little bit less excitement. But I did it, and actually danced for 2 years doing a Bachelor of Arts of Dance, but blew my back out, and that was the end of that, and went back to management. But it was fun. It was a great experience to be on stage.
Ouch.
Yeah, still a pain. I got, like, it wasn't good.
No. Yep. How old were you when that happened?
I was 21. Yeah, it was fine. Like, it, you know, it's one of those things. It's still a problem, but these things teach you. how to
adapt and
be yourself, the best version of yourself. So
that's just awesome what you just said. I mean, I think Tam and I talk about this a lot, and the reason she asked that question was that it seems like there's a recurring theme within a lot of our guests on True North Story as to whether their parents are supportive or less than supportive as to how it impacts their journey. From that point, my father was an educator, a principal, and he was not a creative individual. He's old school, literally old school. So when you start talking about writing and filmmaking and get a way to make a living, and that's not it in his book.
Yeah. No, look, I was extremely fortunate. I grew up in a low socioeconomic area. Most of my friends didn't even have two parents in the house. And if they there was all sorts of bad things going on, or they had, you know, different people in the house. I was so fortunate. I was one of the few kids that had both parents, and they're still together. My dad is an amazing guy. He's into literature. He's a book collector. He's got 10,000 books.
Oh my gosh. That's a library.
He's into art. He used to work in picture framing, so he's into art. He used to judge art shows and whatnot. And so I grew up looking at impressionist art and reading the classics. We'd both read the classics together and talk about them. And so I grew up with this in a very different way to the rest of the kids around my school, which in some ways really made me stick out like a sore thumb, and there was some negative, you know, results that came out of that. But it definitely got me to college and got me this, both my sister and I. My sister's a PhD in mammal research, one of the leaders in her field in the world. And
is your whole family still in Australia?
Yeah, everyone is. Yeah, everyone's in Perth. You know, a long way away, but at least they're all in one place rather than being scattered around Australia. That'd be worse. But I put a lot down to my parents being great parents and dad being such a very interesting guy that brought so much culture to our lives.
Learn, love, listen, live. This is True North Story, the original podcast series. And now, back to the program.
It's really amazing how influential our parents can be, helping us become who we are. They can be very destructive, too, in the other way. But I think if you've got parents who care, the older I get, the more I just respect the hell out of my dad.
Yeah.
And I didn't when I was 20. Now, just every day I wake up, I'm like, man, there's just more and more wrinkles to how amazing a guy my father was.
Yeah, your parents are never perfect. I mean, there's always going to be things, mm-hmm. you know, that even especially, I mean, there's things about dad and there's things about mum, but I mean, Mum would get up, played a lot of sport, which I also think was a great thing that, you know, shaped the team spirit and sort of that kind of orientation for me. But I didn't get there by walking. My mum, I played three sports at elite level. It was a taxi service for me for many years. And so that sort of dedication as well gives you, I was flying around the country playing volleyball and playing in nationals, and they'd save money for me to go and do that. They'd take me to all the trainings, sometimes two or three trainings a day. They're a phenomenal parent, so.
Sounds like it.
So obviously we know you dance and volleyball. What other sports were you involved with or did you take a liking to?
Cricket. So
okay.
I was actually a wicket keeper, which none of your listeners will know what that is. So the guy behind the catcher, is it? Behind
yes.
the plate. So that was kind of me in the version of cricket. Loved it, and probably the sport that I was most gifted at. I just didn't like cricketers. So I did that for 15 years.
Are they like footballers in like Europe?
They're worse than footballers.
Okay.
They're terrible. Sorry to all the cricketers out there. Because there won't be many, so I don't think I'll be upsetting too many people on this podcast. Australian rules football was my other passion. And it's not rugby, it's not soccer, it's its own sport, and I love it. It's my favorite sport to this day. And I played for about 10 years. It was great.
We left off with Ryan in Sydney and running front of house and producing this amazing show and selling just the perfect amount of tickets to get the proper grants.
I actually did that. That's what we're trying to do.
That was the goal. So when does America come into purview?
Oh, a long time later. I've been in the States now for 9 years. So in the meantime, I worked in advertising and marketing extensively, and I worked vendors as well as agencies. So, and a lot of it was advertising, and I did a lot of selling. I think what's really interesting about as you evolve as a human, you start to realize what your triggers are. You know, like I was really being, I would say, played by my managers to sell more because I was so competitive from all the sports. So great, you know, you get a prize if you sell the most. Great, I want that prize. Let's go sell a lot. So I sold a lot of my advertising, which was terrific. But what I didn't realize is what I really, you know, that sort of, it's like an emotional equalizer that picked up all the things about my personality that I didn't actually like, and all the things that I enjoyed doing were kind of squashed. I enjoyed doing the creative briefs and sort of really thinking about the campaign, but what campaign? How are we going to actually impact this business? And so I loved doing all that kind of stuff, but of course I was being rewarded for selling. And it took me a while to actually work out that it wasn't the selling that, I mean, I actually can't stand selling. anyone who wants to employ me didn't just hear that. I'm much more about solutions and trying to develop a strategy for a company that's going to give them the results that they're looking for, and connecting all the dots that way and architecting an ecosystem, a marketing ecosystem to be able to achieve that. And so I loved putting the campaigns together, and it took me a while to work out that's the side I wanted to be on. And once I did that, things started.
There's no coming back.
Yeah, no.
You're not crossing back over.
No, it's done. Yeah. The line of intent, as my buddy would say, is done. I'm across it.
It's really interesting because you think about it creatively. When you look at it from a sales perspective, the creative part of sales is figuring out how you're going to sell somebody, or you know what your tact is, or what your approach is.
Manipulation.
Exactly. Okay. There you go.
I was trying to
stay nice about it.
Yeah, exactly. And I started out in sales, and I
we've all been there now.
Yes, and I exited as quickly as I could. I always joke with Tama because have you seen Glengarry Glen Ross? You have not, right? David Mamet's play and turned into a movie with Alec Baldwin.
I saw the movie. The Ashtray.
So, you know, put the coffee down and all that stuff. Second place is a set of steak knife.
Oh, have I got your attention now? Good. Because we're adding a little something to this month's sales contest. As you all know, first prize is a Cadillac Eldorado. Anybody want to see second prize? Second prize is a set of steak knives. Third prize is you're fired.
I just love that because it's like it's a boiling pot of like, you got to make this happen. I think creativity gets lost in that kind of environment because it's about survival.
Well, it is, and reward, you know.
Exactly.
You know, you're not necessarily rewarded for the success of the campaign you sell. You're rewarded, right. And agencies hardly look at success. I mean, unless they're putting a case study to try and win some award. It's too little that happens. And so you're rewarded for the sales that you achieve because it's after all, a business. So,
and I think going forward too, Ryan, for people who might be interested in talking with Ryan, your type of skill set is increasingly in demand. Because I think companies are evolving, and so they're like, we want to talk to somebody who understands the strategic piece that can help us position ourselves, engage, become more authentic, tell better stories, as opposed to just come in with a bunch of metrics.
Yeah, it's interesting because I think what I've seen evolve is through my career is branding was such a big thing, and everyone wanted to talk about branding for many years and outbrand each other. And sort of folks were interested in metrics, but as you've got, you know, marketing automation tools and all this technology and analytics and ability to measure, the sort of, you know, marketing to me is the balance of art and science. And so the science has really taken over. And I've, you know, spent the last 2 years being a B2B marketer. And I think the science there is almost exclusively science in terms of marketing. So, you know, numbers become, you know, you're almost like a data cruncher in some ways. And I think what I don't want to see happen is just lose the art side of marketing. And I think, you know, when you combine the two, that's when you have the most success. And when you go too far branding, unless you're Coke, we were talking earlier, who can just sort of do the branding piece because they're the same product and it's been there forever and it's just remind people to have it. That's not what a lot of companies, the situation that a lot of companies are in. So you've got to have a balance. You don't want to go too far branding. You don't want to go too far, I think, into the data, into the science, and just lose your connection to your consumer or your buyer or whoever you're trying to target, whether it's a B2C or B2B environment. So I would always, especially in my last position with an agency, which was a B2B agency, as I said, remind people every now and then that we're marketers, not scientists, and that let's try a few things out of the box here and see what our gut tells us.
It's super interesting that you bring that up. Tama, talk to Ryan just a minute about Abigail, because you talk about science. I mean, she was to the exclusion. Abigail Posner.
She's at Google.
Yep.
Anthropology major.
Creative
the study of human beings and what makes them tick. Mm-hmm. And so her study in science.
Yeah, I think this think tank within Google, way deep in the anthropology, like,
I'm thinking why she's do people post selfies, for example?
Yeah.
And find the science behind that.
Does she know the answer to that?
She says it's because you want to document that you were present in the moment at this particular event or with these particular people. You want to preserve that and show the world in some way.
What do you think?
What's your thoughts?
Well, no, I just remember a certain group of girls at a baseball game that made the rounds around Facebook with this video of them doing selfies and just sitting there, and four or five of them just doing selfie after selfie. And I'm sure it was great that they were taking a photo of themselves at the baseball, but they weren't watching one lick of baseball. So
right.
Being present has a context.
At a baseball game in the moment.
Is it not the dumbing down of America or the dumbing down of the... Oh, I mean, look, Australia is the 51st state of America. It's like, I often say that. It's one and the same in terms of television. We watch the same programs. It's really interesting because I do think, you know, you can get down a rabbit hole here in terms of, you can get into politics, you can get a lot of things in terms
exactly,
of how educated
yeah.
people are and sort of how they see the world and what they are engaging with and why they engage with it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think education comes back to being one of the most important topics in relation to that. It's just people getting, you know, making sure that we have a great education system and that we're showing people what great looks like, you know,
mm-hmm.
Whether that be a great author or a great musician, like that people get the opportunity to experience those things. And if they want to still take, you know, selfies and watch some of these TV reality TVs, and that's great.
Well,
but be an educated person making that decision. It's we've just got to make sure we look after the folks as they're coming through.
So part of marketing these days is integrated marketing. And we've got this whole, the digital side. And I know that you are a social media consultant. How have you seen digital play its part?
You know, integrated marketing is being a big part of my life. My last two positions have been, you know, vice president or senior vice president of integrated marketing at big agencies. People ask me, what is that? Especially in the world of content marketing and social media, and all these things overlap. And at the end of the day, I think it's all really integrated marketing. The problem is marketing is done so poorly that they have to have a term called integrated marketing, because shouldn't marketing be integrated? It should be that you're telling a universal story throughout all your channels, and that the channels are working together to move people through their buyer journey to move them towards the purchase of whatever you're selling. You know, sadly, so much of the time you've got a social media department over here and a marketing team over here and a PR team over there, and then a sales team, what's even worse, even completely cut off from all of those departments and any other marketing department you want to create. And they don't work together, and they are separate beings. And because that's what happens when you work with really big companies, a lot of it is so disjointed and fractured. But what was sort of the thing that I've focused on in the last sort of 5 or 6 years has been bringing those departments together, facilitating communication, facilitating outcomes that are sort of, and I mentioned earlier, we're architecting ecosystems. So thinking about your marketing as an ecosystem, as a whole piece, where if you break one piece of it, you can, you know, there's a hole in your funnel. If you think about it in the old school funnel type of mentality, if your ecosystem isn't helping, it's really just architecting a story where people can move through each buyer stage. As every buyer stage, a consumer has a question about question, and you've got to answer those questions and then provide the next one, so that's just ready and plated up.
Well, and what's awesome about that analogy is that it is so true. I love that larger
is a vision
timeline or through line.
And it's happened so often that a company will come to an agency and, hey, I want integrated marketing, and I want to make sure you're really integrated. And then we go work with them, and there is siloed as you could possibly imagine. And so I've got, you know, what I do is actually work with the clients and right up front just say to them, look, we're going to be working with you. I want to make sure we develop tiger teams, which is leaders from every department, that we're setting up a monthly meeting to be able to go through what the marketing team is doing, so everyone's buying in across the company. And you sort of, it's more like a concertina. You everyone comes in to have these meetings and discuss what the plan is and agree. And then everyone goes out and does what their individual pieces, but then comes back in, checks
right.
in. If you structure it right and you structure the engagement correctly, you can actually help companies and facilitate them becoming less siloed and actually becoming integrated themselves. And I think the proof of, you know, my team or myself doing a good job would be great business outcomes after building and architecting that ecosystem so it works really well. But then also walking away and seeing that the company is actually, marketing's talking to sales, and every function within marketing is talking to each other and working together and understanding the role that they play in that ecosystem. So knowing doing, okay, some content on social is going to be top of the funnel branding content. Some of it's going to be really action driving stuff that's designed to get clicks to the website, get them into that domain so that we can track them and then serve up new content and so on and retarget.
I totally agree with you. I just think that we're living in an era where people want collaboration and they want to be able to work together for something larger than themselves. And I think that companies that get that and open up the opportunities to that are going to be the companies that win, because they're going to have employees that are vested and interested, you know, in working for the brand because they're feeling like that they're making a difference.
Yeah, and they're part of a team. I think that's why content marketing has really come on so strong the last couple of years, because, you know, what it is, if content marketing is done properly, you've got multiple teams working together. You've got social media, you've got your design and creative team, you've got your paid team for distribution, you've got, you know, your writers and your editors working on the content, and then your strategists who are working out what those questions are at each buyer stage, so that you can create content that's actually going to, you know, resonate for people at each buyer stage and help them move through the buying decision process. So it's fun. There's a ton of teams that come together to do content marketing, and that's integrated marketing.
What are some of the your favorite brands that you've gotten to work with, or brands that you just think do an amazing job?
It's an interesting one, because I think from a content marketing perspective, you've got your heroes that have always done your Red Bulls with all, I mean, they've got, and everybody talks about it, but they've done a great job. I mean, from dropping a man from space, I mean, content marketing, number one, you know, to even they still print magazines and send you a Red Bull mag. It is interesting, because you do look at the target audience and you know, I would have thought, and they do. I mean, they do those X Games kind of stuff. Red Bull's all over it. So I guess they've segmented their audience into audience personas, and they know exactly what sports those people are interested in, and they go after them with targeted types of campaigns. The guy from space was going to appeal to one group, one persona, right. And, you know, X Games stuff's going to appeal to maybe a younger generation, a little bit more alternative. So, you know, that's what I love about marketing, is few companies have one persona that they're going for. They've got multiple personas. And then, so that therefore you're going to need different types of content for those, different types of distribution, different nurture tracks through marketing automation programs. It's, you know, there's a lot of strategy, and it's fun to work all that out, to dig into that. I had the good fortune to work with some really amazing strategists on my teams who have just nerd out on this stuff. And you can see the joy they're having as they're working through this stuff. You know, I got the opportunity a few years ago to work when the ACA launched, and you can have your opinions about the ACA, but it launched. And, you know, to work with a healthcare company around that time, and they had a sub-brand. What was great was they sort of gave us the opportunity to be creative, and we created a content marketing platform, which, you know, ended up getting over 1 million uniques. And this is just in Washington, Oregon.
Wow.
Won a bunch of awards. Wow. And it was a great content marketing platform for connecting with the people that they wanted to target for their health, this particular little brand, health insurance, who they were targeting for that particular brand. And it was a ton of fun. It was one of the few times where I think I've been given the opportunity, my team's been given the opportunity to be as creative be given the goal, and then been allowed to be creative and then execute it with the right amount of funds and partnerships with media, and we did a bunch of PR. But you know, it was a fully unpaid, and obviously it was a fully integrated program, and it was a ton of fun because, wow, we could do our job.
Yeah.
And it's just so often that we're not actually allowed to do that. So that was really interesting. I enjoyed that. But it's one of the things about working in agencies, you don't always get to work on the stuff you really would want to work on, which is why I'm heading out on my own right now to sort of see if I can work on some brands that I want to wake up in the morning and go, yeah, let's go do that. That's already starting out to be really fun. So that's the sort of, I think, the next step. People working in agencies, you get this great experience, and then you're like, okay.
You know, Alaska Airlines is another one we talk about all the time that we just think is a really awesome company.
Yeah.
And
I'd love to work for Alaska Airlines.
Okay.
That's not a plug. It was a plug. I fly them. I love them. I just love the experience. I mean, there are brands out there that are just so good that you know, REI, your Alaska Airlines, there's a whole bunch.
Just wanted to highlight your blog, Ryan, and your amazing photos. Speaking
Incredible.
Of an outdoorsman. You get out into nature, and do you have a passion for photography?
I do. I've never been a professional photographer, but I think I was about 9 years old when I ran a photo lab at primary school and put all the chemicals in and ran it all myself. And we had the we're funding for that. And one of the benefits of being in a low socioeconomic area is you get this great funding for these exposure for these programs. And so I loved photography from a kid, and moving to the Pacific Northwest has just been, you know, the mountains and the hiking that you can, camping you can do around here. So yeah, then my Instagram account is a ton of fun. It's a place where I can sort of play around with photography, but get outdoors and explore, because I love adventure. I'm a rock climber. And
do you have special equipment, or do you use your iPhone, or do you have a separate camera, or
both? Yeah. I'll have my iPhone. The new 7 is fantastic, but I'll have, you know, that in my pocket for, you know, something that just happens quickly, or I've got a camera in the backpack.
A digital, but I like doing 35mm film,
yeah,
you know.
Me too.
And I love that, because you could use filters, you could play with f-stops, you can do all kinds of good stuff.
Yeah, and look, I've got time constraints. I've got a daughter and a job and life and stuff. So, you know, I go out, I want to enjoy nature, I don't want to come home and spend another 10 hours editing photos. So, honestly, I just take out, you know, a reasonably good camera, and I just go out and put on auto and take some photos, and then do a quick edit and then post it on Instagram. But I do love that. Thanks for bringing that up. It's city is a wonderful place to be based, to be able to do that type of stuff.
Does Seattle remind you of Sydney? It does me.
Yeah, a little bit. It's hilly. Sydney's pretty hilly. There's a lot of water around.
Yep. The little ferries.
Yep.
Go
the ferries.
To Manly or wherever.
Well, I used to live on the northern beaches up north of Manly, so I used to catch the ferry every now and then. You know, there's the Hawkesbury River. I live on the peninsula, so there's ocean on one side and rivers on the other. Blue Mountains. Yep. Beautiful hiking and rock climbing. So, you know, there is a lot of similarities. Weather, not so much. But that's okay. We enjoy it when it's here.
Ryan, how can people engage with you if they want to?
Yeah, I mean, they can follow me anywhere at Ryan in the US. So Twitter, Instagram, find me on Facebook, or go to my website, and there's a form there they can fill out. Do the social media coaching or any of the marketing stuff that we've been talking about, you can contact me through there.
Lastly, one last question just for fun and games. We noticed you have ink. Did you get that ink here, or did you get that ink in Australia? Tell us a little bit about the significance of that.
No, I have three tattoos. One's about sort of family and life and not losing yourself and in the relationships that you have, and just sort of keeping a balance. One is about travel and wings and Australia in the middle of the globe. And the other one is Amani Padme Hum, which is Tibetist mantra for compassion. I'm a Tibetan Buddhist, so I practice Tibetan Buddhism. So, yeah, that's something that I want to keep in my consciousness all the time.
They're so personal. Tama's going to be getting one this summer. I've got one, and yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, we'll talk about that when we're done with the podcast.
Good choice.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you so much, Ryan. It's been a pleasure. We have so enjoyed this conversation. How great is this, Tama?
It's very awesome. Thank you, Ryan.
I really appreciate it, guys. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for listening to True North Story, the series. And tune in next time for another True North Story.